So today I'm going to talk about radical forgiveness. Dare to forgive. But before I do, let me tell you about a minister who gave a talk on forgiveness. And he said to the congregation when he finished his talk, "How many of you have somebody to forgive?" And about 30% of the people raised their hand. He said, "Come on, folks, I know some of you. Now tell me, how many, you know, how many of you have somebody or something to forgive?" And then maybe 75, 80%. And he said, "Now I'm going to start calling names if you're not honest. How many of you have somebody to forgive?" And finally, everybody in the church raised their hand except for a little lady who was 92 years old sitting in her front pew. This was a while back, pews. He said, "Would you come up here, Miss Sadie? This is amazing. You have nobody to forgive." And she said, "That's right." And she came up on the stage and he says, so how has that happened?" And she said, "Well, they've all died." So probably the truth of it is that as long as we are breathing, we probably have something to forgive, including ourselves. But how do we do that? How do we see forgiveness maybe in a different light? How many of you are familiar with radical forgiveness? Raise your hands. Yeah, a few of you, okay? So the rest of you really need to listen. And radical forgiveness is written by Colin Tipping. And in it, there are a couple of assumptions. Number one, there's the assumption that eternal life is always going on, that we came into the world because we are eternal beings and that we will continue after this life into a world as eternal beings. And the question we might ask is, what in the world are we doing while we're not here? And do we always come back here? Well, many people believe that we come back, and I happen to believe that we come back in some form or fashion. And so what happens during that time before I'm reborn physically and that time of which I am floating around in consciousness? That's what I call it. And I don't know what that is. I just know it's something that continues because I can't control, I can control my thoughts. I can't stop my thoughts. And that's evidence of consciousness to me. So what happens? Well, Colin Tipping, in his book, Radical Forgiveness, shares a story about his sister, Jill. Now, I want to talk about Jill's story. And Jill was born and raised in England. And if we get that next slide up there so they can see what she looks like, maybe. Whoops. Here we go. This is Jill's story. There's Jill's story. You can't see what she looks like. But anyway, so Jill is coming to see her brother, Colin, who wrote the book. And she doesn't know anything about the book. He hadn't written it yet. And so what happens is that she gets off the plane, and with her is her brother, who actually lives in Australia, but had come by way of England to see Colin and his wife, Joanne. And when they got off the plane, one of the things that Colin noticed immediately was that his sister was kind of downtrodden, wasn't feeling very good. And he thought maybe it was a trip. But as he talked with her, he could feel the sense of doubt, the sense of not being enough, the sense of wondering what in the world is going on in my life, why me? You ever felt like that? Why me? Everybody should shake their head. Why me? And so what happened was is that at first he didn't say much about it, and they greeted one another, and then he took Jill and his brother on a trip around Atlanta, Georgia. He lives in Alabama. And then they went back, and the next day he says, "Jill, you don't seem to be up to par. What's going on?" And she said, "Well, Colin, my husband and I, Jeff, are having real difficulties. And I think I may be in another marriage that's going to end," because she'd had a previous marriage. And Colin said, "Well, do you want to talk about it?" She said, "I sure do." And so she talked about it from the victim's viewpoint. "It's not my fault, it's his fault." And what she explained was that Jeff, this is her second husband, had a daughter. And the daughter's name was Lorraine. And Lorraine lost her husband in an automobile accident about 6 months ago. And so what happened, because Jeff is a very caring guy, he really took his daughter into care. But what happened, the way he did it was kind of strange, because he left Jill totally out of the picture. And when his daughter would come over, he and his daughter would get together and talk in hushed tones, which was very hurtful to Jill. And they would, and he would kind of, you know, coddle her and treat her like she was maybe a child again. And it continued to happen month after month. And Jill just kind of got tired of it and felt left out and felt rejected. Then what happens is she tells Colin the story, and he listens, and then she tells it again, and he listens, and she tells it again, and he listens. After a while, he decided that he would share with her a concept called radical forgiveness. And he said, Jill, tell me more about why you think, or have you ever felt this way before? And she said, oh, I can tell you right away. And what she told him was that when she was a little girl, her dad would not hold her on his knee. Her dad would not even hug her. Her dad was uncomfortable showing his emotions and his love. Well, you know what a little girl does when that feels that way. She starts to think, as a child, I'm not enough. There's something wrong with me. But her mother said, no, there's nothing wrong with you. It's your dad. It's just the way he is. Okay, fine. And then Will Collins said, okay, so what else? And she said, well, do you remember last time I was here that your daughter, Lorraine, was, I guess, maybe 4 or 5 years old? And that dad showed her all kinds of affection. If she wanted to go out and play, he went out and played with her. If she wanted to sit on his lap, she sat on his lap with her. With him. And so anyway, what happened is that now all of it comes back to Jill. He can show emotion. He can love somebody. I must not be enough. And she carried that with her at a very deep level. And Colin said, do you think my Lorraine in the story and the Lorraine Jeff has have anything in common for you? And she thought about it and said, well, maybe, but, well, yeah, it does, because really it makes me feel like I'm not enough for anybody. And he said, I'd like to talk with you about a new concept. Are you willing to do that? Now, remember, she had told her story several times. He listened, and he said to her, I want you to understand that I do not discount anything you've said. I understand what you're saying. I understand the way you feel, and I'm not taking anything away from you on that. And she said, okay. And she said, I do think I'm ready for a new idea. I'm certainly struggling with this, and it hurts a lot. And he said, well, is it possible? Is it possible that Jeff came into your life and eventually is acting the way he's acting because you don't feel like you are enough? That make some sense? Yeah. And she said, well, I can see that, possibly, but I don't quite understand. And he said, I understand. I know that. And then he asked her, he said, now, you had your first husband. Henry was a womanizer. And after 4 times of affairs, you said no more. That wasn't enough. Is it at all possible that what Henry was saying to you is you don't think you're enough, and I'm going to show you that? I'm going to prove it to you. Is there any possibility of that? And she said, well, I don't know how that would come about, but it kind of makes sense. And he said, well, you know, one of the assumptions that we have to make is that when we are outside of our bodies, when we're having that experience of consciousness, that possibly, because there's something going on out there, that people get together on the spiritual level and decide to play certain roles in other people's lives so that they are able to find and heal something in their life. Now, if you don't believe in eternity, that's okay. It still works. I've had people use this who work it. But is that possible? And she said, well, I never thought of eternity that way. And he said, well, is it possible to think about it? And she said, yes. Yeah, I can grasp that idea. And so he said, so, Henry has one affair after another to prove to you you're not enough, to support your definition of who you are. And Jeff is now doing the same thing in a different way, leaving you out, making you feel different. And he's saying to you, you're not enough, without him even knowing it. Is that possible? And she thought about it. And he said, and what does that have to do with Dad? And she said, well, I did, Colin, I did feel and I know that Dad didn't love me because he proved it to me. And he said, okay, is it at all possible that everybody else that's come along in your life is helping you to overcome that traumatic situation that's taken place? And she said, I think so. He said, okay, you're ready for the next step. You see, Joe, when you have those feelings and emotions and somebody shows up, and remember, they've agreed to show up contractually, literally. They've agreed to act out the role they're acting out, and it might be really hard. I'm sure for Jeff, who loves you so much, it's really a difficult role that he's playing. But he's playing it for your benefit. And if you can start to see that and understand that, now you find that you don't have to forgive Jeff for anything. She thought about it. She said, not only does it make sense for Jeff, I think it makes sense for Henry too. And she said, that's a hard one for me to swallow, but it's making sense to me. And so he says, so, what can you learn from their behavior that will help you grow? And she said, well, I think I'm learning it right now. I think as a child, I saw things in a childish way. And I've never grown past that point of being. And I was only 7 years old. And as she began to see that, what happened was, she began to dwell on that. She was in town for a couple weeks, 3 weeks. And when she was getting ready to go back, she had kind of felt better. Her attitude had changed. Her outlook had changed from the standpoint of the way she showed up during the mornings and during the afternoons. And she was the old Jill that Colin knew. But she still knew she had work to do. And she said, now, I want to know, how do I handle this with Jeff when I get back? He said, don't say anything to him except that you had some experiences while you were gone that were helpful, and ask him to wait a while before you talk about it, because you're not ready to talk about it yet. And that's what she did. And when she got back, she said, Jeff, I'm not blaming you for anything. I've let go of any blame. I'm not forgiving you because you don't need forgiving, because you're doing something to help me. I want you to know that, but that's all I'm going to talk about right now. I want to wait, and give me a couple weeks just to settle in. And as she did that, during that couple of weeks, Jeff stopped the behavior with his daughter that he had, which was pretty amazing. And then after 2 weeks, she looked at Jeff and said, I'm ready to talk. And he said, well, tell me what's going on. She said, the only thing that's going on is I have missed you so much, and I love you so much, and I want you to know that. And he started to cry. And he hugged her and said, I've missed you so much also. Please forgive me. And she said, no, I don't need to forgive you. You did that to help me grow up, and I appreciate that. So as we look at forgiveness, we've been taught to forgive certain ways. And there are things, and the slides are way back. Just listen to me. Don't worry about slide now. The thing that we talk about is a thing called, or what Colin Tipping talks about, is pseudo-forgiveness. And he says that pseudo-forgiveness is when we are literally willing to forgive, but we don't forgive. That sometimes pseudo-forgiveness is giving out of a sense of obligation. I'm supposed to forgive. I've been taught that as a child. I'm supposed to forgive, and I'm supposed to just let go and release. And I'm doing it out of obligation, not because you didn't do something wrong to me, but because I'm just supposed to forgive you. And he says that's a form of pseudo-forgiveness. And then I also forgive because I have a sense of righteousness. I forgive you for doing something wrong to me, and I want you to know that I know you did it. Forgiveness, right? But it's pseudo-forgiveness. It's not really deep. It's not there, he says. And I'm not suggesting that these things don't work also, but I'm suggesting that we have to take a look at it. And then he said the worst thing of all are two things. One, pretending forgiveness, pretending that you're ready to forgive somebody, and you aren't really. You're just saying it to make yourself comfortable, to make them comfortable, because you don't want any confrontation. And then the last one is to say that you can forgive and forget. Forgive and forget. That's not a smart thing to do. And the reason it's not is because if we forgive and forget, we put ourselves maybe in a situation that might be harmful or hurtful to us. If somebody's abusing somebody, we might forgive, but we should not forget, because we have to stay out of that person's way. And so we're learning a lesson from it. So he says, forgive and remember. That's the true way to do it. But even better than that is to take the opportunity to look at somebody who is a Lucy in your life. You know Lucy and Charlie Brown? Huh? Right? And Charlie Brown had Lucy in his life. And what a pain in the neck that was. Always reminding him how little he was, what he couldn't do right. And you know, I've had Lucy's in my life. The first one I remembered was when I worked for what was used to call the Tuberculosis Association. I was the director for the Tidewater area. But this guy would come in to see me, and he would irritate the heck out of me, because he wanted to be the boss. And he wasn't, actually. But he wanted to make sure that I understood he knew more than I did. And so it got that I didn't even want him to come to the office. And so I would avoid him. And then I went to work for a couple of guys. And one of them was the Lucy in my life. It's kind of funny. He came to the office one day, and he came over. What I was in charge of was building a cold storage plant just at the tip in Phoebus, Virginia. And he hired me to do that. I didn't know anything about cold storage plants, but that's what they hired me to do. So he came over one day, and he was, you know, pretty abrupt and very strong guy, both of them were, and I kind of understood that about him. But he came over and really got out of hand, whoops, and all of a sudden, I just said, get off my property. It was his property. Get off my property. You know, he got off my property. It was interesting, okay? So anyway, and what I saw him as is that Lucy in my life. The last Lucy in my life happened about 20 years ago. I was in El Paso as the minister, and we had a finance team. Now, El Paso was a church that when I took over had $29 in the bank and about $280,000 of debt. And and for some reason, they couldn't get a minister to come there. That's why I took over, okay? I wasn't ordained at the time. The best I had was I was used to be a Baptist, licensed Baptist minister, and they thought that was enough to make me a spiritual leader. Strange things happen. But anyway, what happened was that he would come to the finance team, and the church had gotten out of real dire financial needs. And he would sit there and go, we're going to go bankrupt. This is terrible what we're doing here. You're spending too much money. You're doing this. We don't need to do that. And he would just go through this whole scenario every meeting. And I read Radical Forgiveness. And I said, he's trying to teach me something about him or about myself. And I decided I'd take him to lunch one day. And I said, you know, at every finance team, we get into this brawl, into this argument. I mean, if you'd known the way he and I would act, you would not have brought me here. Okay? It was ridiculous. And so we had lunch together. And I said, I'd like to get to know you and see what can we do to make a difference, okay? He said, well, I don't know if anything would make a difference because we disagree totally about finances. And he knew his finances. I'll give him that. I said, well, tell me about what you used to do, because he was in the insurance business at the time. And he said, well, I own 3 restaurants. I said, really? He said, yeah, you know the restaurant down here? He said, I used to own that. It's under a new name now. Really? Yeah. I said, well, what happened? All 3 went bankrupt. Did that give me a picture of why he was saying what he had? It had nothing to do with me. But I took it personal. He was a Lucy in my life. After that, I've not had any more Lucys in my life. Because I try to understand and look at a person, well, what are they there? Why are they there to teach me? What is it I need to learn? How can I see my life differently because they've been in my life and grow? That's what radical forgiveness is really all about. It's saying I'm willing to see the person through the light of love. When Jesus said, forgive your enemies and do no harm to those who persecute you, exactly what he was talking about, I believe. When Jesus said to Peter, when he asked him the question about forgiveness, should we forgive 7 times? Jesus said 7 times 70. Maybe another example of how Jesus understood forgiveness. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't make amends with people. I'm not saying that we shouldn't use the technique we're comfortable with in forgiving people. What I'm saying is that maybe, just maybe, if you look at radical forgiveness, you can see yourself differently. You don't see yourself as a victim. You see yourself as a reserve, as a being blessed. You see yourself in such a light that you're willing to step into that light and you literally relax and can breathe again. But it does take some time. It takes some effort. And it takes an attitude and intention that I am going to see this person differently than I've ever seen them before. You know, this could be a child. This could be a partner. This could be your best friend that is kind of like a thorn in your side. And instead of creating an atmosphere where they're even a deeper thorn, we create an atmosphere that says, yes, yes, I am able to step into this moment and love this person the way I'm supposed to. That's radical forgiveness. I recommend you look it up. I recommend you find the book. I recommend you read about it. Because it will make a huge difference in your life. So much so that things will come up that you never thought about. And you know, when things come up inside of us from the inside out, we start to have and understand that we have beliefs, core values, that are not in the highest good for us. And what we have to do is be willing to let that come up and then use the denial that this has no power over me. And that's what radical forgiveness is all about. Let this come up. It has no power over me. How can I see it different? What can I affirm? Now, what I'm thinking about is, how do I finish this message? And I think what I want to do, I know what I want to do, is to move into meditation in completing this message. So let's take a moment and prepare ourselves. Prepare ourselves to be relaxed, to be in this moment, to understand that when circumstances take place that are uncomfortable for us, we can actually find comfort in them. We can grow because of it. And as we start to understand that, begin to open your heart space. Feel yourself. Experience yourself. And know from that heart space comes light and love. You may want to think about somebody in this moment that has been a Lucy in your life, or a situation. And during the silence, you may want to ask yourself, why is this happening? And what can I learn from this opportunity? And so now let's go into that silence, knowing that Christ in you is your hope of glory. And we find that in the silence. Christ in you is your hope. We find that in the silence. And Christ in you, Christ in you is speaking to you right now. And so now, we understand and know that we can set an intention that says, everybody in my life is there for a purpose. Everybody in my life is here to guide and direct me and give me an understanding of who I am and how I show up. I set the intention to behold the Christ in each and every person, and know that they are divine messengers sharing a message with me. And it's in the name of the Christ within that we find ourselves and our beingness. Namaste.
Of your unfolding.